Welcome to our podcast series. We hope you enjoy and are blessed by the stories, wisdom, and inspiration of the Medical Mission Sisters. Thank you for listening. A lot of stories to tell. But I thought it would be interesting to hear from you many, many years ago, almost 70 years ago, what drew you to MMS to begin with?
I think I was raised in a Catholic family and went to a Catholic school with Catholic teachers. And there was constant talking about mission and working in other countries. And I think it just struck me. And then when they had a vocation, there was a choice. I mean, this is years ago. You got married, you remained single, or you became a religious. There were three choices. Women were not pilots or IT people at that time. And so I chose religious life because I had aunts who were sisters. And my mother's sister was also one, and she was a teacher. But teaching wasn't my gift. And I became interested in mission, and somehow we used to have summer meetings at Notre Dame, Indiana, which we would go to as in high school. And they would have tables there with the different religious communities, and that's how I met Medical Mission Sisters. Okay. And I was impressed with the sister I met. She seemed pleasant, joyful. She was a doctor, and I was interested in what she was doing. So that's how I ended up with Medical Mission Sisters.
Did you know at that time you wanted to be a doctor?
I didn't want to be a doctor.
Oh.
I never wanted it, but we were holy obedience. They told you what to do.
Yeah.
And I never realized that I would even pass, and I did. And when I got through my third year and my fourth year of obs and gyne, I thought, if I get a degree, I'm going to have to act as a doctor, and I don't want to.
Wow.
So I quit. Can you imagine? Somebody paid for my education. For 3 years, I had 3 years of university and 3 years of completed in medicine with no degree. So they thought it was vocation. So I was in this kitchen for 3 years working because they thought it was a vocation thing. And then finally, one sister came from Ghana and she said they needed somebody in Ghana. Could I come? Mm-hmm. So they let me go to Ghana. I was in Ghana for 15 years. Ended up doing hospital administration, and actually I've turned out to be very grateful for my medical background as a hospital administrator, because many hospital administrators do not have a medical background. They don't understand the complexity of running a 24/7 day job in a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And so and then that was Ghana, 15 years. We also worked with training traditional healers. We had a program to train them because the people first went to them before they came to the hospital for care. And we gave them first aid. We showed them how to do first aid. They were very grateful, and it brought us together as a community. The Catholic Church you're working with. Witch doctors. And the government said, you're working with uneducated healers. But it worked out. It came out very well. So I did hospital administration, but also public health and development of the local people. Then they told me to come home because I had gone to Ghana as a missionary, but I had no degrees. And now to get work permits and so forth, you needed all these fancy papers.
Mm-hmm.
So then I came back, and for 2 years I went to do my master's degree in Iowa. They had set up a development program, and there were seven of us who had been abroad and needed to get our fancy master's degree. So I was there for 2 years. So that was a good experience, Iowa. I'm from Ohio originally. I'm not from Iowa.
Can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
When you quit medical school,
yes.
Was that okay, or did you get in trouble with the superiors? Or
well, that's why I was in the kitchen for 3 years.
That was kind of your.
I could accept that because We were sent not without discussion. They told you what to do. It was obedience in those days. Then after it changed, after Vatican II, you could be who you were. So they put me in the kitchen for 3 years. And then I remembered an incident when I was in the novitiate. They said that if something happened in the community that we didn't approve, we could write to Rome.
Oh.
And somehow that clicked with, I remembered that. So I wrote to Rome. I'd have to look at what I even said on the papers anymore, in the paper or someplace. And then Mother Dangle came and talked with me, and she said, "Sister, you have rights. You can make your vows, final vows." See, because in medical school, we were not allowed to make final vows while we were in medicine, studying medicine.
And why was that?
That was just a rule in the society for people in medical school.
They wanted you to finish.
They want you to finish, and then you make a decision. Are you going to...
I see.
Yeah. So...
And then you were permitted to take your vows.
Yes, I was permitted.
Having dropped out of school and said, "I want to do something different."
Yeah. And then one of the sisters came from Ghana, and then I went to Ghana for 15 years, 1968 to 83.
Mm-hmm.
And then they brought me back because I needed to get degrees, and then they ended up sending me to Ethiopia.
Uh-huh. So and how was that for you to go to Ethiopia?
Oh, I went in 1984-85 during a famine. It was appalling. I had never seen anything like that. And also, like, when I first went home after 5 years in Ghana, all of a sudden you see your own country in a whole different context. Have you been outside the country? No. Have you been outside the country? Yes. So when you come back, you see your culture in a whole different context. We have too much. We don't. I mean, it was just, it's appalling.
Yeah.
When you see people not having water, not having a house, not having this, and then you come back here. But we have it here, too, in our rural areas, in our, some of the urban areas, the slum areas, too.
Yeah.
We also have it.
The poverty.
Why aren't we helping? We have the money. Help those. And then water and sanitation. Then I got into that business, too.
Right.
In Ghana a bit, but more in Ethiopia, because it was just, people had no water. It was just appalling. And I was doing hospital administration also. So, I mean, that's a whole story, and I have a whole... You saw the pile of photos of see that process.
So when you were running the hospital, am I remembering correctly that you noticed that people were coming with illnesses or diseases that were preventable?
Oh, I mean, it was appalling. The hospital was half full of people with diarrhea and eye diseases that were preventable. This is not what a hospital is for. And even the government, after 30 years, said safe water is more important for health than a hospital.
Hmm.
Because a hospital can't function if you don't have safe water, because it has to take care of people that have preventable diseases. That's not what a hospital is for.
Right. So what did you do?
Well, I worked with the local people to get water. And we had this horrible famine. In a way, it had a blessing, because people found out there was a continent called Africa and a country called Ethiopia, and money came. Then Catholic Relief Services bought a drilling rig, and we were doing hand-dug wells and spring protection in the villages, but some of the water was deeper and we needed to drill, and that was very expensive. But Catholic Relief Service had a drilling rig. They came and drilled in 28 of our villages a borehole and didn't charge us.
Wow.
I mean, this was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Then, and that's a whole story to get the people to accept water. That's another thing, because they said the river water tastes better. Well, yeah, maybe it tastes better, but it's contaminated too. So when we started the hospital, that's another story. They asked Mother Dangle to come to Ethiopia. And she got on a horse, and they went about 10 miles to a abandoned seminary. They had left it because it was too remote. So they wanted a hospital there because the priests who had been there knew there was need in the villages. But she said, it's too remote, I don't have enough sisters. On the way back to the Quité, they passed a woman being carried in obstructed labor to Addis, 120 miles away. They were carrying her. She said, I will bring sisters. Because Mother Dengel was a doctor also. And the sisters came. Then the next Superior General wanted them to come out because they needed them someplace else. They said no, because they need. So that's how we started Atat in Ethiopia in 1969. Okay. So we've been there 53 years now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is Atat still managed to run by medical mission sisters?
Yes, we're still doing it, yes. Usually we turn over after about 30 years, but what happened was we had an all-Africa meeting, and the sisters, we had turned over our hospitals in Ghana, in Uganda, and Kenya, and they said we need a corporate mission. Uh-huh. Especially for the young sisters coming, that they have experience. So we've kept Atat. So that's one of the few hospitals that we've... I mean, because even in India, we turned over hospitals. I mean, they've all been turned over. You're a missionary. You're there to start it, but it's for the people, the local people, to continue. So we kept Atat, and we're just part of the community now. With the villages, and because we got water for every village. Now, when we got this, the pumps with the Catholic Relief Services, this is one safe water site for a whole village of maybe 100 to 150 families.
Mm.
This was the safe water that they had. And what happened was the women, the girls, could now go to high school because they didn't have to stay home to go and collect water because it was in the village. That was enough to give them, because we'd make sure there was enough water overnight to serve the whole village for the next day.
So the impact of that one thing.
Yes, yes.
Pretty.
And see, we also worked with the villages giving health education to the mothers and giving the kids food. Now we have doctors from our villages because they have good food. They know how to have nutrition. We taught them to grow more vegetables and how to feed the children to give them a complete nutritious diet. They also health education, cleanliness. I mean, and then they could also borrow money. They had a loan system where if the kids went to school, they could borrow money to buy them uniforms and things to go to school. Then they could pay back, they could start a little business because they would grow bananas and tomatoes and so forth. They could sell them in the village and get some money. So, it's a complex thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I have annual reports, you can read the stories and so forth, but it took time.
Yeah.
And then in 1992, we could get 2 birr for a dollar. Then it went 5 birr to the dollar, so we had to raise prices. So we talked to the elders in the villages and we said, if you have 80% pit latrine use, see that you don't shit on somebody else's shit. There were flies all over the place. It was terrible. Even to go into the house, you had to get the whole back bedroom cleaned up so you could get in without a fly. But when they got the pit latrine use, trachoma went down. So then they could do eye diseases.
And can you explain what trachoma is?
It's an infection of the eye, and what happens is, as you get the infection, your eyelashes turn in, and the eyelash can damage the cornea and cause blindness. So we had to do surgery to repair the eyelashes, the eye things. They were doing 2,000. They were working till 10 o'clock at night to get rid of. So then once we got the safe water and the pit latrines, there was less trachoma and less surgery. And now, when you look at our statistics, but this has taken 30 years, they don't even count the number of trachoma that are surgeries.
Because it's
they
so
just
low.
Put it as minor surgeries. They put it in with the other maybe 2 or 3 or 10 a year. They were doing over 2,000 at one point. So I have statistics on some of the PowerPoint, you know, that we have done presentations to show. And even the government finally says safe water is more important for health than a hospital. And it's also water and sanitation, the two things.
Yeah. I just read something that you had talked about when you came to Ethiopia and the famine was there, how it impacted the brain development of children. And now the 50, I mean, this was a while ago that you had said this, so I don't know
how.
But when you were talking about the impact in the village of the wells and the teaching the agriculture art.
Nutrition,
how that impacted.
Because the brain is formed in the first 5 years of life.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't have proper food, the brain doesn't become normal.
Mm-hmm.
So once they had nutrition, the kids are clever. They are so full of energy and clever because they have good nutrition now.
Mm-hmm.
And the basic bread that they have in Ethiopia is injera, which is made from teff. It's gluten-free. It's like our wheat, but it's a tiny, tiny little seed. Mm-hmm. It's a grass with this. And you can get it now in here because there's many Ethiopians here in the States now. You can get Ethiopian restaurants and they'll have teff. And they're growing teff in Texas and so forth. Yeah, and there's a big group of Ethiopians in Atlanta, Georgia, in Texas, in California. Washington, D.C., Amharic is the official language. There are so many Ethiopians.
Hmm.
And also, they all landed up in Minnesota. Now, how they landed in Minnesota, I don't know, but there's also a big... And I think if you've probably met some taxi drivers who are from Ethiopia. Most of the taxi drivers now in this... Because they come and they... And you know, people don't come from another country because they want to leave the country. They come because of the situation there. And if we could help countries settle down, we would have less immigrants trying to come in. Anyway, that's a big issue.
You could talk for another.
So, have you also worked on establishing a school in Atai?
No, we did a nursing school in Wuliso.
Okay.
What happened was, when I went to Ethiopia, the Ethiopian government was the one who trained nurses. And since the girls were not going to high school, most of the nurses in Ethiopia were men.
Hmm.
And then a lot of the Catholic clinics and hospitals were in rural areas, and they couldn't get professional staff. It was a problem. So they asked the Conference of Major Religious Superiors, could they have a nursing school? So if you have a nursing school, you need a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So then, I was a superior at that time, so I was working at CMRS, Conference of Major Religious Superiors, and we looked at having a hospital, where to have it, and Wuliso was where we decided, because in Wuliso, they had been trying for 30 years to get a hospital. The government said, you can have it, but we don't have money, and other places have higher priority. Now, here's Ethiopia, the capital's in the middle, and then there's a long road down to Jima. On this road is Wuliso. There was no hospital on that whole road.
Hmm.
That's about 300 miles. So we decided to build the hospital there. The people gave us 83 hectares of land for the hospital. Wuliso was a small town. We were not even in the town. Now we're in the middle of the town. But anyway, that's another story. And the Italian government, the bishops of the Italian conference gave money to build the hospital. So we have a beautiful hospital and the nursing school we were able to start. We were 11 sisters from 6 congregations and 8 nationalities.
Oh my.
And it worked very, very well. It was one of the, and some of the sisters said it was the best community they ever had.
Wow.
So it worked. We got it started. We had the cooperation of the local people, did whatever we wanted. I mean, they were so grateful to have that hospital. And they even, for extra, we had, of course, to pay staff. They have to pay tax and this kind of thing. But they gave extra duties for some of the staff, like if they had leadership roles and this kind of thing, we gave extra duty payments. Hmm. They didn't have to pay tax on it.
Ah.
That was a big help for the people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
So, I mean, it's just story after story after
yeah.
Because it's not one thing. It's the whole we see even in this country, it's complex.
Mm-hmm.
It's not simple.
It's not just one thing.
No, it's not one thing. And it's you have to have the contact with the people. And see, we did have contact with the people, with the local groups, and with other countries. Because like when we started in Attat, it was our German sisters and our Indian sisters who went to do it. But now we're financing Attat from the people that we know from Germany, because they come and see what we're doing, and they see that we need this, we need that. They go back, they get the money. It's just, we have contact all over the, it's just contact also outside the country as well as within the country,
right.
Because you're working with the government. We're doing the government work.
Mm-hmm.
Running hospitals, we're doing government work. Because this is a hospital, you know, it's just,
yeah.
So anyway, on and on, sorry.
No, it's... Keep going. It's fascinating, really. It's so interesting to hear you talk about.
And I have pictures of some of the things so you can see.
Yeah.
And then also working, see the main religion in Ethiopia is the Orthodox Christianity. That's about 45-50% of the population. Muslims are about 33%. And in Guragi, where we are, they're business people, so it's probably 50% the Muslim. Then the Protestants are 15%, and the Catholics are less than 1%.
Hmm.
But we have influence because of our social work and our education in schools and so forth, the missionary work that was done.
And the medical.
And the medical, yeah.
That you've provided,
yeah. And the nursing school, and that girls can now go to high school. Because when I went, 3% of the students in the eparchy where we are, 3% of the high school students were girls. Now it's 56%.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, but that's because they had water and the sanitation, and the girls didn't have to stay home to take care of it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Far-reaching effect.
Yeah, yeah. You don't realize the impact. And it's God working with the famine, because we got money from the famine, so we could do some of these things. We didn't have it before.
That's interesting.
Yeah. God is slow and crazy sometimes. What to do? Yeah, it takes time. To change mentality takes time.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I can't believe this black-white situation in this country. I mean, I was here during Martin Luther King, and we were told we wanted to go and walk, and they said, don't, because if you get a police record, you can't go to another country. They won't give you a visa.
So you were not allowed to protest as a sister?
Well, I could protest, but if I did, and I got something with the police, then I wouldn't be able to go out to another country because I couldn't get a work permit because I was... I have a record. So it wasn't, I could have done it, but I had to look at the implications, and we were told the implications. So we sold Coke and soft drinks to the people walking. Because we were, and then when I came back recently and saw, I thought this was all over.
Aww.
But it's still not. It's still, some people just have... Trump, and it's not only Trump, it's that people believe this guy and support this. Anyway.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's really complex.
It is complex, but it's unjust, and it's not Christian. And it's not Muslim either. I mean, other religions, this is not right.
Yeah.
This is unjust. It's anyway.
Yeah.
So that's the problems here. If there's problems here, it's complex. It's not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you have any?
I think most of my questions are just culture shocks moving from here over to Africa. What sort of things did you have to get adjusted to? And probably moving back after spending
some time. Moving back is worse. Going there, learn to accept, I mean, that you find out that's what it is, and then right. what you're doing, you have to do it according to what you can do in that situation. Right. When I come back here, I tried to vote for Biden. My absentee ballot came to me in Ethiopia on January 20th, on his day of accept. And we had done it in March and April, and then they said they would send the voting thing to us in August or September, and it arrived January 20th. I mean. And I had tried earlier also to get registered to vote, even at the. You had to go to the embassy in Addis, which was 100 miles away, and you had to make an appointment, and you had to go three times: one time to go register, the next time to get the paper that to register, and then the next time to write the form out to get your absentee ballot. I mean, come on, guys.
It's 2021, 22, right?
Yeah. So
yeah. When you think of your time in at Etat, and now you're leaving, you're like, what are some of your visions or hopes for the community that you've been living in?
I think it's more that there are somebody to continue because it's needed.
Uh-huh.
And it's the local people. And see, like in Etat, we're still there, the sisters, but we're fewer and fewer. But our staff have been there. Some of them have been there 30, 40 years.
Wonderful.
And their children are now people working in the hospital. So it's kind of, in a way, their hospital. Mm-hmm. So I think, anyway, it's turned over to them, and I'm out of it now. I'm retired, as Abba was talking about at Mass this morning. It's over to them. And then in Wuliso, there's another community has just, after we left after 12 years, then there was another community brought in. But actually, that was a poor choice by the church because they didn't realize this community had no experience running hospitals. They were running schools, and they were used to making money with university. And they were trying to make money, but with a hospital in a rural area in Ethiopia, the people can't afford it. I mean, there's no way. I mean, they can pay about 30% of your costs, but then the 70% you have to beg, borrow, and steal whatever you can get. I mean, it's walking on water, I tell you. We did it for years. But now there's another community has come in. They're Italian-based, but they have different nationalities. The sisters that are there are from Thailand. The Philippines. So it'll be interesting to see how they can develop and if they can continue. The people, the support is there for it, so I think they will continue.
Uh-huh.
And the staff, some of our staff are excellent. They've been there from the beginning also in Wuliso, and they were very dedicated. So it's up to the local people now to continue and so forth. And then the sisters who are missionaries. And I was thinking if they, anyway, I'm not involved in it anymore, but like the Italian bishops have always been good support, and there was an NGO there, Kuam, from Italy also, who really has helped us to get the money to keep the hospital going. So if they can continue that. And their community is based in Italy, even though the sisters are from other places. But if they, the Bishop's Conference, to me, if they would give €1 million a year, it would be enough to run the hospital in Ethiopia.
Wow.
Because the burr is, anyway, but that's their, it's their thing now.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. I mean, they have to look at it. The hospital is there. The government is getting, the Prime Minister now is very good, the one they have in Ethiopia. But you've got this Tigray business, which is terrorists. It's just, they have no sense, and they're destroying schools and hospitals. I mean, what does it cost to rebuild a school and restart a hospital? I mean, I don't know, these terrorists, just, I don't know what, where they come from, because they damage it every side, their side and the other side. I don't know.
Are there African medical mission sisters coming to Etat for training? Are you seeing?
Oh, you mean for training? That's a, yeah, that, yeah.
Yeah.
African, well, not in, no, they train in their own country usually. The sisters, our sisters train in their own country. The African sisters, they don't usually go to another country for training, unless it's outside the country because they can't get it in their own country.
Right.
But most of the time they stay in their own country, yeah. And, yeah, the sisters that we're training are Ethiopian sisters from different congregations working in Ethiopia.
Okay.
That was more what it was for.
Uh-huh.
And then also to train rural staff. Mm. Like clinics and that have rural staff, but they couldn't get into the government programs, mm-hmm. but they could get into ours. But the thing is, the school in Wildiso has been very good. We maybe have 30 students a year. We wow. have 300 people taking the exam to get the 30
wow.
places. I mean, because we have 100% pass rate almost.
That's
phenomenal. It's probably one of the best schools in the country.
Wow.
So it's serving the rural areas. And also the government is serving the
right.
Ethiopia to give good nurses.
Right.
Women nurses, as well as we're also training some men.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the rural areas, there are men working in the clinics, and they want them upgraded. And now, also in Ethiopia, they take the three-year nurses program. They can then get a BS degree, then they can get a master's degree, and then they can get trained as surgeons, basic mm-hmm. surgeons. This is a health officer, what they call health officer.
Hmm.
And actually, they're more qualified than GPs. General practitioners, doctors, because they have experience with patients as a nurse, as a three-year nurse.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It really, and see, they can't go outside the country because out here we don't have health officers. We don't know that type of training. And actually, they're very, very good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then, like, the government, after the three-year diploma training, they started just a direct BSc. I prefer the nurses who are diploma that get a BSc. They're better nurses than the ones who are direct nurses, BSc, because they don't have experience
right.
with the patients.
Right.
That's also, healing is just also dealing with the patient,
yeah.
just medicine.
You can't separate that.
No.
Yeah.
How, I know you talked about just your shock as far as still dealing with the race issue in America. So how connected did you stay with what was going on here while there? Did you have?
Yeah, well, at the beginning, no. I mean, I hardly knew what was going on here. Mm-hmm. I totally. Now, because of email, mm-hmm. I can get. I have a couple places, Heath, and Hubble, and they talk about what's going on in the government and in the. Between the Democrats and Republicans and so forth, and I can get it almost every day something from them, and I can follow up on that.
So other
but than I can't do anything. All I do is know what it is, and I can pray about it.
So other than the race issue, what was the most like surprising thing coming back like that's going on here?
Well, that really hit me. I mean, I thought we were finished with that, and then to find out. How people were still being treated was, but what did strike me was how many African Americans I have seen now in positions of government, in the Congress, you know, in different places. I mean, look at the vice president. That this is happening slowly, and these people have great gifts, and. So I can see that that's happening, that more are there, but it's still not enough. It's not enough. And this white situation, I can't turn brown, but I get annoyed with it because they want to be the ones, I don't know, this mentality. And where are they learning it? See, I think it's, my education was in a Catholic school, so we learned some of this politics, but in the government, some of the government schools, they don't learn it. Or it doesn't hit them, or they don't get educated. I don't know. I think it's more in the southern states than it is in the northern, but it's still there, this not accepting other people, which is non-Christian. Mm-hmm. We're supposed to accept everybody, even the ones who are causing the trouble. You have to give them the respect. I don't agree with you, but okay, you're a person, and
yeah.
And this abortion issue is another, talk about a complex situation is the abortion issue. I mean, yeah, women have rights, but so does the newborn.
Very complicated.
I think we just need to educate people on it, and they have to make a decision on where they are. I mean, and then it's not just the women. The men are involved. If you have if she's pregnant, there was a man involved.
Yep, right.
The issues here, it's kind of disheartening because I think this is a rich country. We don't have to be like this. We could be different, but we haven't done it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, I thought, what the heck? But we also see it in other countries too, inter-ethnic problems and so forth. And, I mean, it's there. And then, like when we had some trouble in Waliso when I was there, the elders came to me and said, it's not locally, it's somebody from outside coming in and talking to the young people mm-hmm. and getting it. Because we did have some problems in Waliso. But they came and said, it's not from our area, but it's people coming in and affecting our local people too. So, because Waliso, even though it was in like the Oromia, which is the biggest ethnic group in Ethiopia, the town itself had many ethnic groups living there. So it was
pretty diverse.
They didn't kind of take themselves as Oromia necessarily, because there was all the ethnic groups, the Guragi were there, the Amhara were there, the Tigray and so forth. And this is another issue now, because there are many Tigray people who do not agree with the terrorists and what's going on. And they have caused the trouble in Tigray because they've blocked the roads and taken the cars and the food for their own soldiers, not for the local people. Mm. It's a complex, and see, because we know people, we know what the thing is, but you're never quite sure how true it all is.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's complex.
Yeah.
And the Ethiopian, the Tigrays who are Ethiopian, can't speak out because their families may be damaged or
they're at risk.
Problems.
Yeah.
It's complex.
Yeah.
You feel sorry, but in our world, I think. And see, now with all the technology and the information, we know more. So if we know more, why don't we act more or mm-hmm. change a little bit?
Right. Right.
Such is life.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
It's really fascinating to
listen
to you talk about.
Yeah, it's a rich life, I tell you.
Yeah.
I can't, yeah. And now I'm just happy. Okay, it's your guys. I'm finished. I'm 85. I'm going to be 85 this month. Buck up, you guys. You fixed some of the mess.
I
didn't have much of the mess here. I was in Ethiopia. And the people are so grateful. I mean, they accept us, medical reasons. They're so happy with what we have done mm-hmm. and this kind of thing. They're very grateful. But, and so in a way, they're also continuing because we involved them. Like
right.
when we did the water projects, they had to be involved. They had to bring some money. They had to provide the sand and stones and the unskilled laborers. So they owned it because they were part of it, and
yeah.
they maintain it. So that's part of it, but that takes time. It's easier to get a contractor and put in the water, but the people don't accept it as theirs unless they've been involved in the process. That I learned. And that's also here. You have to be involved yourselves, and then you see it in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Put some skin into it.
And the schools, like mixing, if you have the different nationalities together in a class as students, they get to know each other. It helps break that down. Mm-hmm. That we need to do. Because see, like when I was in school, we only had one black girl in our senior class. Because we were living in a white area of mm-hmm. Cincinnati, so the other nationalities were in the other parts of the city. So we didn't have that in our Catholic schools so much. Yeah. Now maybe some of the Catholic schools did who were in areas that
right.
had different ones, but the where we were where our yeah. ones wasn't. But I was definitely involved with the Martin Luther King business in Medical Mission Sisters, which was just as I was out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
But when I came back and this time and saw that it was still terrible here. So that's...
Yeah. Thank you, Elaine.
You're welcome. Okay.